KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome and thanks for stopping by. We'll be taking a good gardening stroll shortly. If you have any questions or comments about your outdoors, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Every Saturday morning, we get together to discuss your yard, your landscape, your garden, your house plants, potting mixes, soil improvement, pruning bugs, diseases, and weeds. Man, this year it has been weedy. Planting to removals and making the best choices. Remember, my words are there to open opportunities. Afterwards, it's efforts on your part, as this is a great marathon. Sprints generally don't happen in the outdoors, or even, I mean, they happen with houseplants because you're buying them already grown. But you can buy some things and make a quick sprint with plant material, but a lot of times it's still going to take care on your part to keep them alive. So it is a marathon, regardless of what it is. This is your show, and I appreciate you being here. And thanks to Matt. He's producing today. I'm Mike Miller. I've been hosting the Garden Hotline since 1994. 5 gardening books I've written, 2 are currently available in various locations. And during the week, I do landscape cuttings. Excuse me. I don't know where the cough button is. And anyway, I can't touch any buttons because they might be diseased. They tell me, don't touch any buttons. No buttons. During the week, I do something I call a walk and talk. So you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage will have my email address and phone number where I can be reached. And then we can set up a time where I can come to your home and take a look around and help you with anything. Today's Good Gardening Stroll is brought to you by St. Louis Composting, 636-861-3344. It's mid-spring. Can you believe that? Spring started in when? March 22nd. And we had a month there in April. So we're kind of at mid-spring. It's Mother's Day weekend. Sun rising continues to migrate north all the way up until June 22nd. Then it starts migrating back southward. And around my yard, our yard, back along the alley, that narrow strip between the garage and the alley, the lemon verbena, I keep digging it out and throwing it away in the yard waste dumpsters in the alley. But it's prolific. It is just exploding with growth. Also, the coneflowers, which are self-seeded from a garden or a yard down the street, the seeds blew in, and now that I've got my own little colony of purple coneflowers. There's a rescued boxwood that I'd moved back there thinking, well, this is going to be the end of it. It's a microphyllum, small leaf boxwood, and I didn't know if I really wanted to keep it or not. I have pruned back my winter creeper, Euonymus winter creeper, which is very aggressive. Some sprigs just, they were out in the alley, kind of. So I just stuck them in the ground to see what would happen, and that was like 3 years ago. And now I'm probably going to end up taking them out. And also, there's some gold moss, sedum acri. Gold moss is that ground cover, sedum. It's into bloom now, so it is very striking. Also, that goes from that bed along the garage to a couple wedged areas that are just kind of solo, you know, in between the street and the sidewalk. And then it came streaking down several different ways between the sidewalk and street also, around the north side of the house and the west side as well. On the north side foundations, well, what's you're going to be there? Well, there's also with that is the yellow creeping Jenny, which I call yellow money wart. So I have a combination of the gold moss plus the creeping Jenny in that bed space along the north side. In my backyard, the zoysia is actually looking pretty good. I have several pots, one with herbs, one with elephant ears, one with cannas, and knockout roses. Whoa, they are striking. I planted some moonflowers about a week or so ago. I'm still not seeing any above-ground growth yet. And Tracy in the backyard also has her solar-lighted bottle tree. She's always wanted a bottle tree, so we found one that has solar lights in it. And so we've got it out there. And it's not really bottles. We've got, well, I guess they are bottles. They're not technically the bottles that you always think of with bottle trees. But along the north side, too, of foundation of our house, that's where the Mugo pine was that was getting just, you know, a lot of sawfly larvae where they are eating a bunch of the needles. But the candles are really elongating, but you can still tell where the needles had been chewed off by those stupid sawflies. There's clumps of hosta, there's Japanese painted fern, there's a woodland fern as well. A variegated Brunnera, Don't know what variegated Brunner is? B-R-U-N-N-E-R-A. Check it out on the internet. Purple coral bells as well. Get your window. I've got window boxes with pansies in it, and they are looking pretty good even now. They're elongating, yes, because it's really warm. Flower size is getting a little bit smaller, so they'll probably have another couple weeks, and then I'll give them the... And along the front sidewalk, though, I've got all kinds of things, everything from, I've got some seedlings. Apparently, there's a juniper someplace close by because the birds are eating those blue fruits on the junipers. And then sitting in all the trees that we have around our house, the sugar maples, and they're dropping, let's say, seeds. And I almost have a cedar farm or a juniper farm or whatever you want to call it. And I have put some of them in pots just to grow them to see how well they're going to do. So I've got along the front sidewalk, too, there's some artwork. There's gazing balls. There's a fountain. And I've got some pots filled with crotons. I have all kinds of castor beans planted in some of the pots. Some of the castor beans are coming up that actually self-seeded themselves from last year's plants. Kaffir lilies as well. There's a pretty good-sized boxwood. There's a Leland cypress. And they continue to dominate that view. And around the Christie Park side, there are two more pots of knockout roses. So I have four different pots of knockout roses, and man, oh man, they are great. A trellis is standing there waiting for some more moonflowers to grow, just like on the fence in the backyard. So we're just kind of sitting and waiting for those. And the zoysia lawn zips across the front of the house. Mid-spring report from our house. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, when I was talking about the good gardening stroll around Tracy and my yard, one thing I forgot to mention is I saw a huge amount of red clover mites all over my driveway. Clover mites are not the classic mites that do damage to plants. But they are a little bit scary because they can be on your patio chairs, your patio tables. They can be all over anything. Your sidewalks, they're small, probably, millimeter-wise, who knows. But anyway, they're tiny red dots, but they're not like some of the mites that you can't hardly see without a magnifying glass. You can see these, but they really don't do any damage to the plant material. They're just a real nuisance. Because if you set your glass down and put your elbow down next to your glass and you've got red clover mites on your table, you're going to squash them. So you're going to have that stuff left on your table and you're going to also have it on your arm. So watch out for the red clover mites. The warmer weather has brought them out a little sooner than anticipated. Gloria lives in St. Louis. Gloria, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. I would ask you about, I'm trying to plant some watermelons. And where I got them plant, I got some a rock in there. I can't get them all out. Can I put some of this cardboard or plastic and build the dirt up and put the watermelons in?
You mean, let's see. So you're saying the area where you're trying to plant the watermelons, you have a lot of stones or rocks in that garden area?
Yeah, I have rocks there.
Rock only? I mean, there is soil, correct?
Yes.
Oh, you probably
it is because I've got some of them out.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't have that much of a problem with just leaving the rock in place. As long as you got some adequate soil, the watermelon seed should sprout, and then of course you're going to fertilize them as you normally do. But that shouldn't really be a problem. Actually, that may help with some of the situations where poorly drained areas. You're not going to have that if you do have stones or rocks in the area where you're trying to grow them.
Okay. Another thing I want to ask you, thank you for that. But now I want to ask you about the Zorga grass. My Zorga grass is terrible. But I just bought some plugs. But do you have a better way to plant those plugs in the ground?
No, there is no better way. Basically, you got to dig a little space, basically the same size of the plug. Don't just stick it in the same ground and make sure that spot is well drained because zoysia, if it's a low spot, and you don't have anything growing in there, it's probably because whatever was growing there initially, whatever type of lawn, it drowned. So you got to make sure it's at least level and put, when you dig the hole, mix in some compost in that hole.
And then yeah,
you
I got
put
all
the,
of it.
Okay, then you can just put the zoysia plug in there and just make sure that you keep it watered at least for a couple of weeks, especially when it's this dry and on days when we have wind.
Yeah, Well, I got flowers outside, so I have to water every day. So.
Okay, great.
What about where the spot is? Is a little grass there? Don't worry about that. Just get a spot where it's got dirt.
Yeah, you can plant it, you know, with existing grass. But, you know, it's going to be, you know, problematic from the standpoint if this existing grass is a little bit more aggressive than the zoysia will be, especially initially, it could be problematic. But if you take care of the zoysia, it should be able to handle the situation as long as the soil is good.
So I can't put it in all the spots that I see is bare.
Yeah.
And you're doing what, 5 feet? How many feet apart?
It's up to you. You can put them a few inches apart or you can put them a couple feet apart. It's going to take it a couple years to infill if you put them a couple feet apart.
So what's the best? Close together?
Yeah, 6 or 8 inches or a foot or so.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks, Gloria. And now let's go to Jerry, and Jerry is in Florissant. Hi, Jerry.
Hey, Mike. I got a couple of questions for you. One of them's kind of stupid. What's the smallest pot that you would use depth and width for maybe one tomato plant?
I probably wouldn't have anything any smaller than probably, you know, 18 inches, to be honest.
Across?
Yeah, and deep wise too, because you can have, you know, you can grow tomatoes in smaller, you know, smaller pots, but it's just tomatoes need a huge amount of water. And if you put them in a really small pot, then they're going to, you know, this potting mix that you're planting them in is going to be drying out. Maybe you're going to end up having to water a couple times a day, maybe, even if you put a saucer underneath it. So you got to have adequate area if you know to hold enough potting mix for the tomato to get an adequate root system, and you're going to fertilize it on a regular basis because even all the tomatoes, whether they're cherry tomatoes or the big, you know, better boys and, you know, best girl, whatever they happen to be, but they need a lot of space, you know, so 18 inches would be as small as I'd go.
Okay, second question. Miracle-Gro for plants. Can you put that on zoysia? Is that kind of like a fertilizer?
Well, it is, but I don't like, you know, I don't know, you know, Miracle-Gro, what the numbers are on it. So for, you know, any type of lawn circumstance, I don't like that first number, which is nitrogen, to be any higher than probably 15 would be the maximum. You know, 12 or 10 or something like that would be even a little bit better. So some of the Miracle-Gro products are like 30, 10, 10 or something like that. That's not a number that I'd want to put on my lawn.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yep. And now let's go to Joanne and Belle Fountain Neighbors. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I have a question about pre-emergent.
Uh-huh.
Is it different from just weed killer?
Yes. Pre-emergent kills the plant's seeds as they grow.
Okay.
So when the seed germinates, it kills them right then. You put a pre-emergent down in your area, and the plants are already growing, the weeds or whatever it happens to be, it's not going to do anything.
I see. All right. Now, if I were to apply it in the fall and in the spring, is it the same product?
Yes, basically it's the same product, and each time you're getting rid of a couple different weeds because in the fall what it is cool season weeds are germinating and growing through the entire winter time. Then in the spring it's the warm season weeds that are germinating and then growing through the entire summertime.
But so, it'd be the same product.
Yeah, you could use the same product.
Okay, and after you put down that when could you put down grass seed after you put down the pre-emergent?
I would, to be honest with you, if you got to do that, I would not. I just avoid it, to be honest, putting grass seed down. Because it's going to be too complicated with our weather and everything else. I mean, there is a window of, you know, opportunity or time. But, you know, I would not fool with trying to do that.
Well, I figure if I put down the pre-emergent, I'm going to have an awful lot of bare spots.
Right.
But and so I shouldn't put grass seed in there?
You get the grass seed down now, you know, and you could grow. In May is a great time to put grass seed down. So you could do that and then consequently then wait until mid to late August to put the, you know, pre-emergent down. Then your grass will be, you know, in good shape.
I see. Okay. And in the spring, would that be like March?
Basically, I always say pre-emergent should be put down when the yellow forsythia is in bloom. Or if you get a soil thermometer, when your soil temperatures are between 50 and 55 for several days in a row.
Okay. All right, fine. Thank you very much.
Certainly. Good luck with that. And Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, Mother's Day weekend. My mother's no longer with us, my father either. But on Mother's Day, this tradition started off when we were kids. My mother, we always wanted to cook something for her for Mother's Day. So she kept it simple. She always said, just make some soup. So soup, and then we'd buy a cake. And so it was soup and cake. We always called it something. Yeah, we always had that thing, soup and cake. So for Mother's Day. Let's go now to St. Charles and go into William's yard. Hi, William.
Well, good morning, everyone. Hi, Mike. I hope you're well.
Yes.
I seem to be having a wabbit problem.
A rabbit?
A wabbit problem.
Yes.
And I have, of course, being an intelligent man over the age of 50, I have at my disposal anywhere from a slingshot to a 10-gauge. I also have a secret weapon, mothballs. But I'm concerned that the naphthalene will leach into the soil and ruin my tender roses or any of my other vegetation. What do you suggest?
Yes, you could try a repellent, but are the rabbits actually really causing you problems?
It's either that or the squirrels. One or the other. And I love them both. I mean, I don't want to kill anybody, but I love my flowers, too.
Right. Well, Bonide has a product called Repels All. So I would go to your favorite garden center and see if they have the Repels All and try that and see how that works for you. It repels pretty much any kind of rodent, mammal, anything like that.
You don't think the naphthalene would be beneficial?
No, I don't.
Okay. I won't try that. Okay. And also, I'm sitting out in my garden as we speak, and I saw my first two hummingbirds for the season.
Wow.
Hallelujah. I got my feeder out.
Great. Perfect. I haven't seen any yet.
Yeah, no, I've heard that they're out, and yes, they are. St. Charles.
Perfect. I guess
Mike,
they bypass the city.
Yeah. Mike, have a great day. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and thanks for calling in, and thanks for having me on your show. Let's go from St. Charles to West County. And, Russ, how are you today?
I'm well.
Great.
Lady was calling about the watermelon a while ago.
Right.
One of the things that she wants to do is remember, it is a vine. You want to plant it on the eastern portion of your property. It will grow to the west. It follows the sun.
Right.
You also want to take, and she said you have rocks, that's good for the water in that content. You could, if you got the ability to put some sand in there, that would do also.
That's very true. Make sure you use traction sand and not just the sandbox sand, because that particle size is too small. And our clay soils together with that small, particle size sand can bake up in the summertime to be bricks.
Correct. Now, when you were talking about the tomatoes a while ago, about the moisture content, to bring them and draw, one thing, if you're going to do that, a way to make something interesting is to plant your tomato plants and put a dowel rod out there and stake them to grow up as high as you can. You follow what I'm going
so far? Sure, yeah.
Okay, now after that, if you've got the ability and you don't want to take a long drive anywhere, you can mix yourself in some indigo sativa-type plants out there. And when you put that in there, it's going to hide itself with the tomatoes.
Oh, you're kidding.
Well, it's going to be a little bit. It's not like you're going to grow these things out there. It's going to be very obvious. and you know what I'm talking about,
yes.
Too. And you take and you crop them down, they'll bush out and they won't get tall, won't draw a lot of attraction. You can also, my grandfather used to, he turned me on to doing that when I was a kid. He did something very unusual. He used to grow hot plants. And he would splice the sativa or the indigo plant to the hot plant. That would have a very interesting taste, and he made beer that was very, very unusual.
Really? So you're talking about the vine, the hops for beer, that, and he spliced sativa into that?
Yep, and then you got a buzz off that. I've got some friends of mine who live out in Colorado. What they do, they've got the hot houses, and what they're doing is they're growing their own plants more than what's supposed to be, at a good point. And they've got a bee's nest in there, beehive. The bees are making honey that give you a buzz also.
True. Now, Tease Farm used to have a beehive in their, attached to one of their greenhouses as well. I don't think they have it anymore. But what it was is the beekeeping society or whatever, they maintained it. But that's a very good idea.
Of course. That way you get a little toast with a wake-up call in the morning.
Right, very true. Well, thanks, Russ.
You got to remember that sativa and indica are two different plants. Indica is more for an insomnia and pain, and sativa is more for an awareness type usage.
Oh.
I believe in that very much. And if you also, something else here, and I'm very much on doing things that most people don't believe in. If you read a story about from John Hopkins about 6 months ago, they did a study on people using magic mushrooms. And they were talking about how this takes anxiety away from people, calms them down, helps people quit smoking, and people who are terminal to put themselves in a way that they're going to accept the end of their life much easier.
Wow. Well, thanks a lot. I mean, that's some great insight on several different things, Russ. Now let's go to Greenville over in Illinois into Kathy's yard. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, Mike. We had so many weeds in our lawn this past spring, and so I couldn't use weed killer because I wanted to plant grass, so I went ahead and hand-weeded our lawn. Nuts. But anyway, then I aerated and I put down some garden soil, and then I worked that in, and then I seeded it and put a top layer of potting soil, but I didn't put any straw down on top of that. But the rains last week washed away a lot of the potting soil and grass seed. So when I reseed, should I put on a light layer of straw?
No, I don't think straw does any good personally. I've okay. yet to see. My fear of straw is if it's laying there, and even unless you got one straw piece and there's not a pile of them, and even a couple, because it can create a fungus problem. And nothing is worse for, newly germinated any kind of seed than fungus. So I just, the whole straw thing. Now, I recommend definitely putting potting soil or whatever you put down on the top layer. That's not really going to do too much. If you want to put something down, put compost, because unless you've got a fairly steep slope, the compost is going to stay where you put it. And, any kind of lower, lighter type thing is going to definitely migrate away. And sometimes not even doesn't take rainfall. It could be a strong wind or something like that could move it away from where you want it. But, right. You can use, like a Weed Be Gone, a broadleaf weed killer, if those are the type of weed you have and it's not an annual bluegrass weed. And you can use that, not necessarily on the same day. You should probably wait for a week or so after you spray a broadleaf weed killer before you put grass seed down. But those two type things are compatible with each other.
Oh, I see. Well, the other problem is I was doing all this digging. We have a lot of grubs. So when can I put down grub X?
Basically, your grub season's, if you're seeing them up close to the surface, then you can put them down. You can put it down now.
Even though I planted that grass seed, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
This is an insecticide, Grub X or any of those type things. That kills the bugs. That doesn't really impact the. It's not related to plant material at all.
Okay, great. Okay, I just didn't want to ruin all my hard work. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Yeah, sure. And, myself, I have been hand weeding too. And I'll tell you, sometimes I don't have a huge yard. I live in the city and everything else. But a full day of weeding, the bed spaces between the street and the sidewalk and then the lawn areas and then some of the bed areas and things like that. Boy, oh boy, this has just been a horrible, weed season. Also, with the sugar maples around the house, they don't produce the seeds like the silver maples, the huge helicopters. But these small ones, wherever they land, they don't even have to be in contact with the soil. They just germinate. So I have like a maple tree forest, or potentially. So I just go along and pick them up. But, sooner or later, your back starts feeling, getting a little bit.
My back and my wrist. Yeah, I'm in a bad way, too. Because I weeded for several days. We don't have a huge lawn, but it was really a lot of work. But
yeah.
You know what? I want a grass seed that germinates as well as those maples. That's what I want.
I agree. It's just like as soon as they hit the ground, I've watched a couple of them just, from a curiosity standpoint. If the weather's right, temperature-wise, and moisture's right, they can, sprout within like 2 to 3 days.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to work on that. Get a great grass seed. Thanks so much, Mike.
Sure. And now let's stay in Illinois and go over to Tom's yard. And Tom lives in Illinois, as I said.
Hi. I got a quick question. Two questions, really. One is, I've got a backyard that's got some bare spots in it from a dog running, running its path, and the dog's not there anymore. Is it too late to put some seed down? I mean, the grass is growing other than that, other than the the few, you know, the one or two paths that the dog has run a path through.
No, May is really the ideal month to put it in. It's just this one's a little bit warmer or hotter than usual, so you're going to have to just watch the seed that you put down, you know, a little bit more as far as moisture-wise and things like that. But don't let just throw it into these bare spots. You're going to have to, if you wanted to do it right, I don't know if you have a rototiller, I don't know if you have a spade, but turn the area over, let it kind of level out, you know, add some compost or organic matter with it, and then put the seed down. Because if you just throw the seed down, you're just wasting your time.
Okay. Now, the next question is I have a tree there in the backyard, and the root has gotten really big, and it's growing, and it's caused the driveway to buckle a little bit.
Ooh.
What's the ramifications if I clear that area around that root and trim down that root or chop it down? I mean, is it going to kill the tree?
Well, it may not kill it, but it could weaken it, because the root system amount, the biomass, how much root system there is directly related to how much above ground growth there is for the tree, because they have to be pretty much equal. Because the root system takes up nutrients and moisture, sends it up to the leaves, and the leaves then use sunlight plus the nutrients and moisture to make food, and that keeps the tree healthy. So depending upon how large this tree is, as far as how, you know, and then how large this root system is, it won't kill, but it could cause a little bit of decline.
Okay, well, the tree's pretty big. I mean, I think we planted it like 25 years ago,
okay.
It's gotten big.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate thing, but you could try, but just understand that you could be impacting the overall health of your tree.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep.
Appreciate it. Appreciate your service.
Well, thank you for having me on, and thanks for having me on your show. If anybody does have any questions, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we've still got a couple minutes in this hour and in the next hour of the Garden Hotline. So let's go right now to Kitty, and Kitty lives in Melville. Hi, Kitty.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very good.
I have a Japanese maple that's out in the front of my yard, and it's kind of the focal point of my landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kind that has the feathering leaves on it, and it
right.
drapes down. Well, this winter, I should say late winter, the squirrels got a hold of it, and it looked like Charlie Brown's Christmas tree.
Whoa.
They chewed off almost every branch on there except for maybe five. So I've got, and those five branches are growing. I mean, they have leaves on them.
Right.
I contacted my arborist that I have come out, and he just kind of, he said, oh, don't touch it. Let it alone. I said, but it looks horrible. It's like, it's the focal point of my landscaping. I want to know your opinion. If I would dig that out, I know it's still alive, and if I would dig it out and just put it somewhere else in my yard where it's not the focal point, do you think it would still survive?
This is getting a little bit late to be digging something and transplanting.
Okay.
Especially with the weather. Now, you could try it. It's just going to mean that it's going to be somewhat iffy. Now, this is an Acer palmatum dissectum if it has that very airy look
yes.
to the foliage and kind of looks like an umbrella sitting there.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
one thing you could do is go to your favorite garden center. I don't know how big this was. They don't really get much taller than what they are when you buy them, but they get much wider.
Wider,
so,
yeah.
consequently, you could go and buy a couple small ones and just plant them in close proximity to this one and just let them grow together as like a small Japanese maple grove.
Oh, I didn't think about that. Okay.
So that's going to give you the option of, you know, not having to take the chance on digging it and moving it and then putting something in there that's, you know, not going to have any kind of structure or status too much, you know, at all for a couple of years.
Yeah, it looks so sad.
Right.
So
I've never really heard of the squirrels chewing
I had a whole apartment complex under the hood of my car this year.
Wow.
I had teenagers, I had mom and dad, I had everybody underneath there.
I'll tell you what, Melville sounds a little scary when it comes to squirrels.
Oh, they're horrible. They're, I don't know. They're the bane of my existence. Well, I appreciate your opinion. I just wanted to get a second one. My arbor says leave it alone, and I'm like,
ooh. Yeah. For anything that's, you know, any of the tips of the branches that are, shredded, usually when squirrels, chew off something, they almost make a professional cut, like at a 45-degree angle.
That's what he thought, because I sent him a picture, and he said, why did you prune that like that? And I said, I didn't prune it like that.
So, that's you're right. That's absolutely the case. They must have just been really bored or something.
Well, I think they were looking for a warm place. They didn't like the nest in the tree. They liked my engine, I think, in my car.
So, anyway, just, put this, if you want to get a couple new ones and just position them, especially position them so when you look out your window or your most important view, that's going to be, let's say, buffered with the new ones that you're, putting in.
Well, that's a good idea, because I am redoing the front, so that is a good idea. Well, I appreciate your advice, and I'll take it under consideration.
Great. Well, thanks.
Thank you. Have a great day. Yep.
And, folks, for the next hour, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. One thing, also, speaking of squirrels, if you have an oak tree or when you take a walk or something, you notice a bunch of small branches, 6 or 8 inches, laying on the ground underneath your oak trees, that is squirrels too. You can just, all you have to do is pick up one of them, and if it's cut at a 45-degree angle very professionally, the squirrels are doing that. A lot of them, what they do is they don't have, it's not necessarily they don't have anything to do. It's not like they're eating them or anything. They have to chew. Squirrels' teeth, the lower teeth would grow into the upper part of their mouth, and so consequently, if they don't chew, by chewing onto anything, that reduces lessens the chance of that happening. So that's what's going on right now. When I take my walks, there are several oaks that have a lot of twigs, and it's all related to the squirrels just chewing. And so it's not bugs, it's not anything at all doing this. It's simply squirrels. So, but this is the first time, to be honest with you, I've heard of Japanese maples, being chewed by squirrels. So crazy stuff going on out there, and who knows what's going to be next. So if you do have any questions, give us a call. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. I certainly appreciate you all being there, and happy Mother's Day weekend.